it's really almost morally shocking to realize that in so much of the world, in particularly in sub-Saharan Africa and Asia, people are dying from things that are completely preventable, including malaria, including diarrheal diseases, including childbirth. It's such a gross inequity to consider that depending upon where you were born will determine whether you live to 45 or whether you live till 86. And we have the knowledge to affect those things. So, and that's also true in this country, that your health outcomes are largely determined by your zip code. So one of the themes we're going to be looking at and thinking about is this question of bridging inequities and addressing inequities in delivering health overall.
I have to be honest, the first thing that I think is, wow, is there the money to tackle these issues?
Well, you know, I think fortunately there is. I think the truth is that funding for global health has grown very significantly over the last decade, particularly in some of the key preventable diseases like tuberculosis, malaria, and others. And in large part, the Gates Foundation has a big part of that, as well as Robert Wood Johnson Foundation in the U.S. and others. So I think we've gone a long way to recognizing that health is fundamental to productivity, to economic health, to security in many places in the world. And so I think the answer to that is yes. The challenges lie more in having the resolve to care about issues as they affect people all across the world. And then secondly, to think through what are the solutions and what are the systematic ways we can address some of these challenges.
You say the money is there. Is that combination of looking at what nations have, what nonprofits have, what intergovernmental agencies have, where would it come from?
So it would precisely be that. Fortunately, there's very significant engagement on the part of the private sector and corporate America in investing in global health. And I think foundations have played a leading role in research and pilot projects that can make a real difference. And then, of course, the non-governmental sector is very significant. At Spotlight Health, we have the Minister of Health of Rwanda coming. Her name is Agnes, and she's a really fantastic woman. She's a force of nature. And Rwanda, as most people know, really suffered from a very serious civil war and genocide. And most people thought, how will this country ever recover? But it was a combination of the government of Rwanda, international foundations, private sector donors, non-governmental organizations, that in fact, Rwanda, for example, is going to be one of the countries to meet almost all of its Millennium Goal targets. So the targets for things like reducing maternal mortality, reducing child mortality, increasing the number of vaccinations, reducing malaria. It was really a combination of a multitude of folks that really moved the needle on some of those key issues.
What do you think are the three most likely to improve health issues globally in the next 10 years?
More attention to women's health, I hope, will become less of a political issue and more of a non-controversial issue, particularly focusing on adolescence, teen girls, teen pregnancy. I really think that we've jumped over a chasm that made it difficult to talk about women's health issues and now more appropriately sees women as a key foundational piece of economic health. I think that some of the preventable diseases under 5-child mortality will really change. I think it's very likely that we will eradicate malaria in our lifetimes. Some of the things that are going to be the most challenging for us to address relate to, for example, care. We in America are living much, much longer, really for medical advances and any number of other reasons, but we don't have the caregivers to help us with that, whereas other parts of the world are not living longer, and many of those health workers, nurses, and doctors are going to Western countries where they can get higher wages and have a more stable employment life. If you, Elise, or any of the listeners have been in a hospital recently, many foreign health workers are the ones who are caring for our parents or caring for ourselves. And it's wonderful that there are opportunities, for example, in America that haven't been elsewhere, but we haven't really addressed the question of whether we need to look at the medical system in the U.S. to increase the numbers of doctors and nurses that we need, and then also in the countries where many of the nurses and doctors are leaving from, how we can train more and support more doctors to be in those countries. So I think that's going to continue to be kind of a systemic problem that is a tough one to address.